Blog Talk Radio.
Andrew, can you hear me now?
Yes.
It would help if I took the mic off mute, right?
I was like, oh, should I start talking? Am I alone?
Yeah. No, the mic was on mute. So technical difficulties. I had technical difficulties when I was on with Wade the other night. I lost power in the middle of the show. So I'm just batting 1,000 lately with technical issues. But yeah, that was just simply my mic was on mute.
It's just one of those days. That's okay.
Yeah, it feels like one of those days. But I'll start with my question that I asked and then did not hear a response to because you didn't hear it. I wanted to know, do you think you shared my opinion of Collision the other night?
I enjoyed it for the most part, but I don't know your full opinion, I would say.
I enjoyed it as well. Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if we're on the same page. And I think we are. Did it feel to you, because it did feel to me, like I made this comment the other night, but I felt like I was watching the launch of a new company, not just a new show. Like that was kind of what it felt like, in part because of the circumstances surrounding it, and I think who was going to be featured and who wasn't, and kind of all that stuff. Did it feel like it was, I mean, it was AEW, but I kind of felt like I was watching this launch of a new promotion in some ways, not just a new show.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of, like, making it different enough. You know, with, like, the new announce team, I think, helped a lot. Like, the new graphics, the ropes in general. It was a much better look than, say, Nitro versus Thunder. It was more on along the lines of, like, Raw and SmackDown. Like, you know, just had a different look to it. But, yeah, I thought it looked good. And, I could see that kind of, like, feels like a whole, kind of a new promotion.
Yeah. Well, just especially with... The announce team was different, right? And then you had Punk returning. You had Andrade returning. You had Miro returning. Like, it was all these guys we haven't seen for a while. It kind of felt like you were watching a brand new promotion, not just a brand new show.
I think it was a strong start overall. I mean, I guess we'll see, like, how the following weeks go, because obviously they're not going to have, like, that crazy of a crowd, like, size-wise and probably just, like, passion-wise. But I think they're off to a good start so far.
Yeah, I mean, it was it did have a different feel to it. That was for sure. I felt like the show was paced a little bit differently. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but like it didn't feel. I said to Wade on the post show the other night, I didn't feel like I was getting screamed at the way I am when I watched Dynamite, and that's both because Excalibur wasn't physically screaming at me, but also, you know, it didn't seem like the pacing was such where they had 2 hours and 30 minutes crammed into 2 hours. Like, it actually felt like the show was paced and timed really well, and it felt like a wrestling show. Like, my only critique would be it felt like a special. You know, they didn't really have anything promoting next week's show outside of a couple of small little things. I don't know. I imagine that's what they're going to use Dynamite for, but I would have preferred, and I think it'd be smarter to make the assumption that these audiences may be a little independent of each other and not necessarily watching all 6 hours of television every week, if you include, you know, Rampage in there, or 5 hours of television a week, if you include Rampage in there as well. So I would have liked to see them say, hey, the main event of Collision next week is going to be this. I mean, it's just something as simple as that. But other than that, I just felt like it was paced better and felt more like what I would call a traditional wrestling show rather than the, all right, we have this, and then we have this, and then we have this, and then we have this, and stay tuned because this is coming up next. Oh, my God. Like that we get on Wednesday where everything is 600 miles an hour and being yelled at me.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I like Excalibur, but that part of what he does, and it's not on him at all, it's on Tony Khan, but it is annoying, and they do it every week, and you would think by this point they would learn how to promote things better throughout the show. But yeah, that kind of stood out to me, especially during the Andrade Buddy Matthews match. It was just like, you know, two kind of mid-card guys, Andrade probably like an upper mid-carder, but nothing crazy going on. They just give him like 15 minutes or so and just kind of like telling that story of, you know, Andrade wins, he's back, he's you know, probably going to put himself in title contention before long, but it wasn't, yeah, like, it wasn't like Kevin Kelly, just like, and Nigel McGuinness, like, just screaming at us about anything. So it was a nice change of pace, and I do hope they don't have, like, Kevin Kelly, like, screaming at the end of every, like, segment about what we need to watch on Dynamite next week.
I don't think that's in Kevin Kelly's nature either, though. I just think his style is different, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, we've got to talk about, you know, the biggest thing that people are talking about from the show, and that's the Punk promo. Do you want to know my conspiracy theory before we move forward?
Yes, I absolutely would.
That six-man match is happening. Punk and FTR against the Elite, it's happening. They've agreed to it. It's done.
Oh, wow.
And I this is why I believe that to be true. Going back to earlier Saturday, or Friday, actually, I think it was, with the ESPN interview, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Punk was very critical in that interview of Adam Page. He didn't mention the Young Bucks, and he didn't mention Kenny Omega. At least not by name, right? Mm-hmm. People were freaking out about that. I mean, I'm sure we'll have emails and callers that are still going to say Punk shouldn't have done the interview. He was childish for what he said. Look, he said his part. AEW arranged that interview number one. Of course they knew he was going to be asked about it because ESPN, Mark Romani's not doing his job if he doesn't ask. So I'm sure that they may have even gone over what some of those responses were going to be. But in any event, he blasted Hangman, who I think he still hates, by the way. This whole thing, if you read that article too, Punk's issues stem from the Hangman promo last May when he said that, you know, basically he got Cabana fired and he's defending AEW from CM Punk. That seems to be the crux of Punk's problem. It's Hangman and Hangman's promo and the fact that nothing was done to Hangman after he, as Punk put it, jeopardized the first $1 million house in the history of this company. So that I still don't think Punk and Hangman are going to get along. I don't think Punk and Hangman are going to be able to coexist. But he didn't say anything about the Bucks. Move forward to Saturday night. Punk cuts his promo. He doesn't mention Hangman at all, even though he very clearly from the ESPN story still doesn't like him and almost blames Hangman for most of the issue. He has the counterfeit Bucks line, which everybody oohed and aahed about, okay? I'm convinced, and I have not been online since Saturday, so I don't even know. This may have been reported by now. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I'm convinced that line was approved for a number of reasons. One, he mentioned David Zaslav, who's the CEO of Warner Brothers Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's using his name in a promo unless Tony okays it, number one. I also think because of the sensitivity of the situation that line about the counterfeit Bucks was probably approved ahead of time. I think the Bucks knew it was coming, hence the response on Twitter of, if this were 2018, we'd already have a counterfeit Bucks shirt on sale at Pro Wrestling Tees, which I thought was kind of funny, you know, even though I'm not a fan of them. So I think that line was approved. And I don't think Tony approves it unless he knows the Bucks are going to be okay with it. That's part of the issue, right? The other thing, which I think is a tell, and no, I haven't heard anybody really talk about this. At one point, I forget the line that drew the response, but Punk made a comment, and then the crowd started a very loud and very noticeable F the Elite chant.
Yes.
And I went back and watched the promo two more times yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think Punk shut that chant down.
Really?
He could have let, if you watch that again, he could have let that go for a much longer period of time than he did. You know, it was on for maybe 5 seconds, and then Punk went in right into his next line, and the chant went away. The CM Punk that we all know, the petty, vindictive,
yes,
moody,
yep,
CM Punk, if he wanted to, he stands in the ring silent, he puts the microphone up in the air, and that chant gets louder and louder and louder, and it goes on for 30, 45 seconds.
Mm-hmm. In Chicago,
he didn't
in
Chicago, yeah. He shut it down. He went right to his next line, the chant stopped, and it never really came back. So, again, I don't know if that's kind of an olive branch or whatever, but I think there's some evidence, and it's a, you know, conspiracy theory, but I think there's some evidence there that they may have this thing worked out. The counterfeit Bucks line was approved. Whatever the Bucks are going to say this Wednesday has been approved, and they're going to say whatever they're going to say, and they're not going to do it right away because there's business they have to take care of first. But I think at some point, and my guess is that November pay-per-view, because that's the one that generally doesn't do well, that might be the main event to the November pay-per-view.
Interesting. So, okay. So this is a long game because they have to wait for like 5 months for that.
And I think they're going to keep taking subtle jabs at each other on TV, on each of their own shows over the next couple of months.
I think the latest, the report I saw today was that Punk is going to be on Dynamite and the Bucks and Omega will not, but they're probably doing like a pre-taped. So I guess, so to lean into conspiracy, they're like just playing into that and saying like, hey, you know, we can't have you guys on the same shows, like send in your videos.
100%. I think the only people that know are Tony, the Bucks, Punk, and FTR, and Kenny Omega. I think that's it. I don't think anybody else in the locker room knows this is happening. I think they're keeping this very close to the vest. But again, I think there's some evidence there that they may be trying to do some business here. You know, I, and here's the other thing. Like, I don't see why Tony approves the counterfeit Bucks line unless you're working to an angle towards a match at some point. If this were really still that sensitive of an issue, Tony doesn't even let Punk say that.
Okay. Yeah. I would think so. Yeah. The only thing that would be, you know, Tony and Punk, they have a great relationship, or at least according to Punk in that interview. So maybe that's Tony being like, I'll let you get away with one. You know, don't go overboard. Don't cut a big promo, but you can have one line. Just don't go over the top. Maybe. But we could also, but it is more fun to think of it as a conspiracy as well.
I just think that, like, if Tony was really that worried about this, it would be you can't talk about him at all. Like, because there's issue. I mean, for months, it's been, well, legally, with lawyers, we haven't been able to talk about it. And Punk did make a mention to the Bucks, I think, in that ESPN story. He said something to the effect of, I've tried to reach out, and every single time I do, I get a lawyer that calls me back and says, don't talk to this person. So, you know, it wasn't like there was anything bad there in the ESPN story. I also think we've heard about this. Like, no one's saying anything. Everyone's super quiet about it. But Tony's going to okay Punk going out there and delivering that line, knowing how sensitive the situation apparently is if you listen to Tony and everybody else. Like, I'm having a hard time buying that. Like, I think he is working something. And I think there's a way to do it, too. Like, you could do a surprise, because remember, they got a lot of big matches they have to fill. They teased Punk MJF, which I think comes first. You know, I think that probably is all out in Chicago. That might be the main event for that pay-per-view.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
You know, it's back in Chicago. That's where Punk got hurt a year ago, the full circle moment. You can have the moment where Punk's about to win the title, and then the Elite run in and cost. You know, and that place would go ballistic if that were to ever happen. And that sets up. It gets Punk out of the title feud, number one. Again, I know I got a little tinfoil hat on here, but let's say Tony doesn't want Punk in the title picture, but he's got to address the fact that Punk never lost the title.
Yeah.
So you got to do the Punk-MJF match, but he doesn't want to beat MJF. And he really doesn't want to be Punk either. Well, now, if you do the Elite feud, that is a very valid reason to pull Punk out of the title picture going into the November pay-per-view, or just in general. So everyone right now, every report right now is that the match is not on the table, it's never going to happen. What I'll say to that is 8 months ago, the reports were Punk's never going to return to AEW. He's getting bought out. It's done. It's never happened. He's never coming back. And here we are. So I don't close the door on it. Not only do I not close the door on it, I think there were some breadcrumbs on Saturday that might suggest they've got this thing worked out. And they're the only ones that know, but they may be beginning to work in that direction.
I was thinking this as well, like working in favor of your conspiracy theory is also the fact that the contracts of the Bucks and the Hangman, not the Hangman, Hangman and Kenny Omega are all coming up and they haven't re-signed it as far as we know. So Tony might want to be like, hey, don't piss these guys off, please, because I want to re-sign them. Unless they are essentially working and he knows that he will be able to re-sign them. So trying to add a little bit more there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Punk has real issues with Hangman. Like, I don't think he's fine with Hangman. I don't think we're going to get a Punk-Hangman match. Like, I think that is done with. I don't think that's happening. But I think the six-man is possible. And it also gives him an out. I mean, look, the fight was between Kenny, the Bucks, and Punk, right? So you can't do a three-on-one. So the six-man's the only thing that makes sense if you're going to try to make money with it. And, again, breadcrumbs, right? You would have to do a six-man. That's the only way it makes sense. Come back with. He came back in a six-man. So, like, you've established that he's friendly with FTR. They had matching gear. They had, like, a Punk had a jacket on that said CMFTR.
They have a T-shirt you can buy, too, yeah.
Yeah. Is that they're doing that for one match? I don't think so. Like, I don't think they're making gear and selling a shirt and doing all this stuff for the one match on Collision last week. You know, I just don't. And there's a real story there to tell. Clearly they're on the same page because they've worked together, but there was at one point, you know, real-life friction between FTR and the Young Bucks. There's real-life friction between Punk and the Young Bucks. And Kenny's kind of just there, but he was involved. So there's – it all makes sense that this is the match you do as long as everybody's on the same page. Like, this just makes sense.
Yeah, I still think it's the biggest match they could do. I mean, either that six-man or Omega versus Punk, like one-on-one. Like, those are kind of the two big ones I think you could do. So I certainly think it is, like, possible because, as you were saying, like, Punk, he just seemed like he was written off. Like, you know, we were reading online, like, oh, anytime this week we're going to hear that his contract was bought out, he's gone. Is he going to go to WWE? Is he trying to, like, you know, become friends with Triple H again? So there's all that, like, speculation, and amazingly, I guess, he came back. So I think he's letting it be known, too, that he's, like, willing to work with everyone, and I think Omega's willing to work. And I think, you know, if they look at it from a business perspective, the Bucks would, you know, maybe be able to, you know, not enthusiastically do this match, but be able to realize it's probably the best thing they could do for just, like, an overall business standpoint right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like, I don't think everything's all roses. I think he hates Hangman. I think that's real. I think that's very real. You could tell by the story, you know, the ESPN article. Like, I think he really dislikes Hangman Page. And I don't think they're going to work together. But I don't know. And then there's some other little things, too, like Scorpio Sky. Like, Scorpio Sky gets the second chance on Collision after he was not used forever on Dynamite, and Scorpio Sky is part of that SoCal crew with the Young Bucks. Like, you know what I mean? He's not part of the Elite, but he's kind of part of their group of buddies. So there's just, I don't know. I could very well be wrong, right? I think you and I were both talking back in October that we thought Punk would even be back at some point. And a lot of people thought we were wrong, but here we are. So I'm not saying that we know everything, but I'm saying that I'm not ruling it out. I know the reports are, I think even from Wade, is that, you know, it's not happening. And I believe that people are saying that. I also believe that if it is happening, there's like maybe four people that know about it. or seven, I guess. The six people in the match and Tony. And they might be the only seven people on the planet that know about it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't rule it out at all. I mean, I don't know how likely it is, but I certainly think that actually, you know what, I think at some point, I mean, just wrestling being wrestling, at some point I think they will compete, even if it's 2 years from now, you know, if we have to wait that long for like tempers to flare down. But like everybody essentially works with each other in wrestling, and just it's human nature to not be able to hold on to anger for that long. I mean, you see like Bret Hart coming back to WWE and like making up with Shawn Michaels, and from all accounts, they're like cool with each other now. It's just hard, unless somebody like murders one of your family members, it's hard to stay mad at somebody for years and years and years. So we're already looking at almost a year ago, coming up on that. So, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, I think it would happen, yeah.
And I don't think you need to do it at Wembley. Like, they've already sold 60,000 tickets. They don't need to do it at Wembley. Wembley doesn't need that match.
Right.
The tickets are sold. You know, the title match at All Out makes sense. And it would make sense to let this simmer for a little bit. You don't want to come back and do the match right away, because then everyone's going to go, oh, see, that everything's fine. You know, I think Punk and the Bucks and going back and forth and taking little snipes at each other and promos over the next couple of weeks going throughout the summer, we'll just build it up. And it kind of builds it behind the scenes. Like, you're not promoting that match yet, but the comments are there and it's kind of bubbling underneath until, you know, maybe Punk says something real bad right before he challenges MJF for the title, and then, you know, the Elite interfere and cost him the belt, or so, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
That was just in my head. But I don't know. I can't come up with a reason why Tony would okay that counterfeit Bucks line unless there was a match coming.
Interesting.
Either that, or, I mean, I know that we've kind of mocked his abilities as a manager and a boss. I mean, that's an extra slice of stupid. If you're like, hey, yeah, you know what? You guys, you know, got a brawl the last time you were in a room together. This is clearly still an issue. Lawyers are involved. Like, who knows? There could be litigation about this. Yeah, why don't you go out there and take a snipe at him on television? I think he's an idiot if he allowed it and they're not on the same page. Like, I have to think that they are.
Well, that whole thing is odd, too, because, you know, I mean, it seemed like Punk was for sure coming back, I don't know, like 6 weeks ago. And then he went online and he got pissed off at, like, Jericho and other people. So you would have almost have thought, like, Tony would have been like, hey, no, like, we're not doing the Sports Illustrated thing, just, like, in fear that he would say something to – because, like, if that blew up, like, a day before, you know, Collision aired, like, what would they have even done? That would have been, like, catastrophic for them. So, yeah, maybe he works it all out. And he's like, yeah, you know, say what you want to say because we're, you know, you guys are going to do a match someday. You've all agreed to it, so why not?
Yeah, and I think if that were to happen and they were working together, I think everything is getting approved ahead of time. Like, I think, you know, the Bucks get told from either Punk or Tony, this is what's going to be said. Are you cool with that? Yeah, we are. Okay, Wednesday night, the Bucks, hey, Punk, this is what we're going to say. Like, are you cool with that? Yes, no. The dangerous line to walk, as we found out with the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels story 20 years ago. But, you know, I think that that's probably what's happening if they are working together. I mean, I think there's some communication there, but I don't know. We'll see. And again, I don't think they're going to show it now. Like, I don't think they're going to show their cards now. And I don't think you need it for Wembley. I don't think you need it for All Out. What makes sense is that November pay-per-view when you're up against college football and no one's really paying attention because it's not one of your bigger shows. Like, that could be the time to do that match.
Well, the thing is, too, it's like they don't need to do it right now. So, like, if you go back in time to, I don't know, like 2005 or something, when it was Matt Hardy and Edge, and as soon as they rehired Matt Hardy, they did the Edge feud because it was, like, the biggest thing going on for either guy. It just seemed to make sense at that point in time. But right now, like, the BCC is having, like, a pretty entertaining feud with the Elite. You know, Takeshita and Kenny Omega are going to fight. So you'd have to, like, push all that stuff aside to go right into the to CM Punk feud. So it's like they don't need to do it right now. So, yeah, that would make sense as well.
All right, let's go to calls, and then we'll go to emails. 305 is up first. I think this is DJ in Miami. Am I correct or no?
Yep, DJ from Miami.
Yeah, see, I like it. I'm starting to memorize these numbers here. How you doing?
How you doing? I went back and watched the show, and I feel like, I don't know, Sammy is just like, he's a heel, then he's a face, then he's a heel, and then I'm like, he's like, oh, I'm pregnant, I'm having a daughter, like, okay, so that means you're becoming a face? Like, he is such a better heel, I just don't like this. And then, like, what? 6 months later when they have the kid, he's going to turn heel again. His wife is a heel too. It's just like, I don't know what they're going to really do with Sammy at the end of the day. You know, he keep on flip-flopping and nobody's going to like him, but nobody people like him now because, oh, I'm having a kid and blah, 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 but what is he going to say 6 months later, you know, or 8, 9 months later? is he going to go back to Jericho, or what is really going to happen with Sammy at the end of the day? You know, everybody else, they really have nothing for him, and they're like just seeing which way it goes.
Yeah, I didn't like that either, Andrew. I don't know what your thoughts were, but it was they don't know what to do with Sammy. I mean, Sammy's almost like at Big Show levels of turning back and forth at this point, I feel like.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. And I think, like, maybe Todd Martin, like, made the same point or pointed out. But basically, like, you know, when Darby Allin came out there, it was, like, pandering. It was basically like, hey, these people love you. But they really didn't. Like, he got a pretty, like, mild reception. I don't think people are all that excited to see Sammy Guevara, like, turn face. No, I think if he turns face, it'll flop again. And they'll have to turn him back within 6 months or, like, really try to lean into him being a father, which – I don't know. It doesn't do much for me. Like, a lot of people have kids. A lot of bad people have kids. So, you know, I don't like somebody just because they have kids. That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, to me, they flip-flop way too much, and it's just going to hurt him at the end of the day. But we'll see. My second thing is the Sting thing. I go back and watch this thing with Sting and Jericho. It's just like, Sting really didn't give it his all in his last match with Jericho. I don't think Sting, this is going to be his last match. This is like, what is this really going to do? Is this going to be like one of the fake matches he had with, you know, Cole? Or is this going to be a real match with, you know, at the end of the day with Sting? You know, is Sting really going to roll with Jericho because they never worked together? So, you know, what's going to really happen at the end of the day with Sting with this? Because I know Sting really wants to wrap it up, but, I mean, I'm kind of scared getting in a feud with Jericho. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I can't imagine that's going to be a one-on-one match, Andrew. Do you? I mean, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't think he's done a single one-on-one match, has he?
I can't think of one. I don't recall one.
Yeah, if he does, I think you need somebody like a Sammy Guevara or an MJF, somebody who's like going to do the vast majority of the bumping and running and movement. Because Jericho is very, very, very good for a guy in his 50s, but you put a 50-year-old and a 60-year-old and have him go one-on-one for 10 minutes, like, that could get bad.
Yeah, I think he needs too much help. You know, I do. I don't think he can I don't think he can sustain a one-on-one match. And if he can, I mean, Jericho's not the one to do it, you know?
No, yeah.
I just feel like they're going to do it because they never fought each other before. So I feel like maybe Tony's going to push that issue. I'm not sure on that. You know what I'm saying?
I can see where Tony would want it. I just don't think it. I don't think it's logically going to be,
so.
Realistically going to be something that works.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it might just end up, I think it'll end up being a tag match. I would guess, but
that's yeah. I mean, and there's partners there that make sense. I mean. Yeah, again, I don't see it. I don't think Sting can do it at his age. I really don't.
Okay, my last thing is real quick. When you guys are talking about Punk, I was really thinking at the end of the day, going into this, where is he? You know how he is, like how he got hurt, you know. Where is he really going to put all effort? He is hurt right now still. We all know this because, you know, we were talking about this the other day. But at the end of the day, where do you think he's really going to push himself? And he's going to hurt himself even more. Do you think it's going to be with MJF? Is it going to be with the Elite? Because at the end of the day, you can still see he's hurt. And I just don't want him to push himself every day and not have a big money match, you know what I'm saying? And then I'm scared at the big money match he's going to hurt himself, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's got to slow it down. Honestly, I think he's got to almost take the MJF approach and do like, look, I'm going to have like 10 matches a year. You know, almost like the Lesnar approach. Like, I'm going to be on the show a lot. I'll cut promos. I'll do angles, but I'm not necessarily going to wrestle every week. And that might be hard for him to do. But yeah, I mean, look, he's gotten hurt in each of his last, in two out of his last three matches, basically. So, or no, I guess two out of his last four, because he had that other one with Moxley before the pay-per-view. Regardless, he needs to slow it down. Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And that just becomes kind of that Lesnar type of schedule. And I think I also think that makes his matches feel bigger and more special, too.
Yeah, I felt a bit nervous just like watching him in general, you know, thinking he'd, you know, hoping he doesn't get hurt again, but like thinking it was a distinct possibility. I would say, I mean, I think he'll probably have a feud with Samoa Joe coming up. I think they'll probably do a singles match before long, and then maybe a singles feud with Switchblade as well. I'm assuming Punk is high on him as a competitor if, you know, he got him in. Because I'm guessing Punk could have had pretty much anyone he wanted except the Elite in that six-man. So I think the fact that he had Switchblade in there is a good sign for him. So I could see that being a singles match too.
I don't know what's going to really happen because I'm kind of scared because, you know, at the end of the day, I know he likes to push himself, but I just don't want him to push himself at the wrong time, you know, and hurt himself even more. So at the end of the day, we'll see. But my last thing really fast is that I heard from the grapevine Bobby Lashley is not happy. Do you really think he would be good at EAW or do you think that he just should retire?
I think Lashley would be useful in AEW. You know, I don't know in what role, but I like him. Like, I'm a fan of Lashley, so I think he would work in some way. You know, he probably, I don't think he'd be a main event guy, you know, but I think he'd probably be somewhere on the level of like a Wardlow or a Powerhouse Hobbs or something like that. Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of high on Bobby Lashley still. Like, I think he was doing really good, like, solid heel work in Impact. And I think if you could get that kind of character work out of him, I see potential there. I mean, it's interesting because, like, Tony Khan's, for the most part, not, like, a big body guy. You know, so, like, you know, not a lot of guys outside of, like, Wardlow are in really, like, featured roles like that. So, and plus he's got the WWE experience. I think it would be interesting to have him there. I don't think it would be a bad idea, but I don't also don't rule out that it wouldn't go over super well. But, I mean, he's, like, 45, 46. He looks amazing. And he still, like, moves around really well. So I would be – I'd be interested if I were Tony Khan.
Let me ask you one question, though, real quick before I get off. If he does come, he'll be the first African-American heavyweight champion because they don't have one of those yet in EAW, as you can tell.
No. No, I don't think he'd get the title. Andrew, I don't know if you disagree. I mean, I think that could be – honestly, I think it could be a Powerhouse Hobbs at some point if they continue to build him that way. That it seems like they're starting to do some sort of push with him. I don't think that Tony would push Lashley in the title picture. He may be that upper part of the mid card, but I don't think he'd push him in the title picture.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, he might get like a big match against whoever holds the title, but I don't see him winning it. I would say Powerhouse Hobbs would have a better chance to be the first black champion.
All right, and so good to know, you know. All right, I guess I'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Yep, thanks for the call. Yeah, you know, actually, another guy who impressed me over the weekend, I forget, was it Dynamite last week or was it Rampage that I was watching? I don't know what I was watching. but it was Swerve Strickland, who every time
see
him, I'm like, this dude is bigger than I thought. Like, I've said that about a dozen times now. Like, every time I see him, I'm like, yeah, he's got some decent size. He's not a small guy. Like, I don't know why I have this preconceived notion in my head that Swerve Strickland's like a small high flyer, but, like, he's not. He's a decent-sized dude.
Yeah, I think he's near the top of my list, I think, of people, like, under-pushed in that company. Like, I would have him, you know, entering the main event scene sometime this year. I think he's got a lot of like untapped potential. It bummed me out to see him lose to Orange Cassidy, but also I think he deserves better than that. So yeah, I would love to see him have a bigger role in the company.
Side note, before we get to some emails, did you see the comments from, I think it was Kazarian? I know it was Kazarian. I think he did an interview with Kurt Angle about leaving AEW and basically how he was frustrated and thought he could have been used more, and obviously he was used more at the very beginning, his first tag team champion of the company's history, but kind of fell by the wayside, and then that's why he chose to leave, and I think he's back in Impact now, right?
He is in it. Yep, he's in Impact.
But it was funny, because I read the interview, I read some comments from the interview, and then I was listening to, I was driving home today, listening to, I was all caught up in my podcast, so I was listening to last week's Jim Cornette podcast, and he was talking about this interview, and he was like, yeah, he probably got upset sitting there going, geez, I'm Frankie Kazarian, I got 20 years in the business, I know I can outwork half the roster, but I got to watch the idiot with his hands in his pockets get 25 minutes of TV time a week while, you know, I'm stuck in catering, not getting a match.
Yeah.
it just made me chuckle because, like, yeah, no offense, Orange Cassidy, but, you know, there's – I don't know what it is. Tony seems to be a fan of Orange Cassidy, and I will admit it's not my cup of tea. I think that there's a reason he's on TV because he does get a reaction from the crowd. I still think he's overpushed, but I at least get it. I at least get it. But it does seem like, Andrew, with Orange Cassidy, that they cooled on him for a while there. Like, at one point he beat Jericho, and it was like, oh, my God, they're actually going to strap the rocket to Orange Cassidy, of all people.
Yeah.
And it felt like they cooled that down. And I don't know, over the last couple of weeks, it feels like they're trying to heat that up again, and I don't really like where it's going.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I begrudgingly would disagree with Cornette because, like you're saying, Orange Cassidy is really over. and Kazarian, they tried a few things. I mean, he just never really got over on his own. They cut short his angle where he was, like, the elite hunter. They beat him, like, right away, which didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, what's funny, too, is, like, I remember when that first happened. They didn't even know, like, they weren't even explaining why or who it was. It was just, who's this guy? I thought it was a fan. It's like, who's this guy jumping the rail, beating up the elite?
I was surprised they gave him that, because that was a pretty big role. And then they had him lose, like, his first or second singles match against, like, Doc Gallows or Carl Anderson or something. And that just, like, killed it. But I don't know. I like Kazarian. He's a good hand in the ring, as they say. And he's got some personality. But, yeah, I didn't quite see it working out great for him in AEW. But, yeah.
All right, let's get to some emails here. The emails that always love us so much. Zach in Texas is up first. There's so much to talk about, fellas. I don't even know where to start. Actually, I do. We have to start with that ESPN interview. Sure, it was arranged, and it wasn't as controversial as rumors implied, but Punk still managed to make himself look like a hypocritical man-child. In one breath, he said he apologized to Tony Khan, and in the next, he tries to justify his actions by explaining that nothing was done about the, quote, situation. The situation in this case is him being bent out of shape that Hangman believed Punk was responsible for Colt Cabana being reassigned and went off script in a promo. Nobody, literally nobody, except for the elite, cared where Cabana was. No fans were discussing it. They're discussing the absence of Cabana and cursing Punk's name, so for him to get that frustrated and still be harboring resentment is so juvenile. Did he expect Tony Khan to hold a meeting absolving him of responsibility for Cabana's reassignment and fire as an example of to not cross the almighty Punk? He has more about Collision in a second, but I don't know. I don't think that's being fair to Punk at all. I mean, he's being, I would just say this, Zach, if it were reversed, right? Cause Zach does not like Punk. That's been established in our emails. But if it was flipped the other way around and Punk went off script and accused Hangman of getting somebody fired that nobody was talking about, I think the email from Zach would be that Punk was, you know, what should be fired for what he did, and this is unacceptable behavior and it's unprofessional. But I don't think you could just excuse Hangman for what he did here. Like, at the end of the day, you could argue that Hangman started the whole situation. Like, if Hangman doesn't deliver that line, I don't know if any of this stuff, other stuff happens. I don't think we could just absolve Hangman from any responsibility here and say that Punk's being juvenile about it. Like, I don't know. Someone makes a false accusation about me, I'd be pretty pissed off about it too.
On TV, no less, because
And to make Punk look bad when he's supposed to be the top babyface in the company at that point in time.
Yeah, it was
kind of undercutting what you're doing here.
Yeah, it was a dumb thing of what Hangman said, because even if we're like, okay, barely anybody knows what he says, well, then don't say it. Like, you know, you're supposed to be selling a storyline and nobody knows what you're talking to or referring to, like, Colt Cabana. Like, don't say it. Like, he's obviously trying to get under Punk's skin. But again, as we've said many times, Punk handled this terribly. He should not have taken that time and space to blow up like he did. But, yeah, he didn't I understand where he was frustrated from. I think he went over the top with it, of course, but it was to start with a dumb thing for Hangman to have said.
Yeah, I agree there. You know, he shouldn't have done what he did at the press conference, obviously. But you'll never convince me that Punk did anything wrong when he made the line about Hangman in his promo when he came back a few months later. Like, clearly, like, yeah, it was, it must have really pissed him off that he held on to it for that long. But to me, that's an eye for an eye. Like, Hangman went off script and undercut Punk. Well, Punk went off script and undercut Hangman. Like, that to me, that's just, that's an eye for an eye. Like, that is what it is.
Like you mean like when he like called him out?
Called him out, knowing that he wasn't there. But you know, I just don't think that we can say, yeah, I mean, Punk shouldn't have done what he did at the press conference. He's admitted that at this point. I just don't think we can. I don't think it's fair to Punk to sit here and go, well, he just should have stood there and like nobody was talking about it anyway. So who cares if Hangman made a false accusation? Well, how about we sit here and say, hey, Hangman, don't be a moron. Like, you know, it's not Punk's fault that Hangman said something stupid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's,
I mean, that's,
I think it's possible that they're, it's possible for us to say that they were both wrong here.
Well, and that's a place too. I mean, like where Tony Khan should have stepped in and been like, Hangman, like what are you doing? Like,
and I think that's what frustrated Punk is. Punk said nothing was done about it.
Yeah.
So it's like, Hangman says this line, Punk gets pissed and is like, Tony, he went off script. He's accusing me of something here. What are you going to do about it? And Tony didn't do anything, including, like, didn't even release a statement or anything to say that it was wrong. And if you remember back to the press conference when Punk was getting frustrated about it, Tony even said, like, you're right. I should have said something about that sooner. Like, I should have shut that down sooner.
If I recall, like, go ahead.
Like, Tony was even kind of admitting, like, I kind of let this drag on a little bit too long here.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, if I recall, like, the verbal, like, sparring between those two, like, the feud that they set up, it wasn't, like, this super personal thing. It was, like, Punk became number one contender, and his whole thing was, like, hey, let the best man win, but I'm, you know, the best wrestler in the world, and I don't know why you're so mad. And, you know, and Hangman was like, his character was like really, really, really bent out of shape and pissed off. And it didn't make a lot of sense. So, I mean,
no.
Yeah. So the and whole thing. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. They were all baby faces.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it'd be one thing if Punk was a heel and he was on TV doing what Hangman was accusing him of, saying one thing and being like, you know, I'm fighting for the little guy. And then in the background, not really doing it. If that were his character on television, it wasn't. His character on television was that he spoke up for the little guy, the voice of the voiceless. Like, that was still the deal. And Hangman just kind of undercut it as if Punk was a heel at that point in time. He wasn't.
It's just, like, so stupid because, like, if you make that accusation and you're watching the show but you don't read online, you'd just be like, wait, what? When did that happen? Like, what segment? Did I miss a segment? Was that on Rampage? Like, when did Punk not stand up for somebody? Like, it made no sense.
Yeah, it made no sense. All right. Continuing on with Zach's email, he says, that's the perfect segue in the collision. To me, the reaction that Punk had was a total outlier and should be tossed out. Okay, so he gets no credit at all. Chicago is hardly neutral territory, after all. I thought the not-so-thinly-veiled shots at the Elite were ill-advised. Punk himself said in the ESPN piece that the match was unlikely, so why stoke the flames? Well, I said earlier, I think that's all a bunch of lies. There's a way to acknowledge the past without taking shots at the Elite. Before you go off on a tangent about the Elite taking passive-aggressive digs at Punk on social media, which they've done, it's social media. Oh, okay. So, again, that should be excused. So, again, Andrew, just I'm going to reiterate here. When the Bucks do it, it's okay because it's just social media. When Punk does it, it's wrong. Okay. As long as we've established that.
Got, so, if you insulted me on social media and I was like, Mike, what was up with that? You're just like, yeah, it's social media.
It's social. Don't worry about it.
Doesn't count.
Zach continues. There's a vast difference between that and national TV. Also, potentially setting up a match between a de facto heel Punk and uber heel MJF seems like a very bad idea. Tony Khan is just asking for the fans to cheer MJF all over again. I don't know if Punk is a de facto heel. Zach may want Punk to be a de facto heel, and we'll see what the reaction is when he goes into some other markets, but that was not the reaction on Saturday, I will say. And I know it doesn't count because it was Chicago, apparently, but I don't know. I mean, from what I recall, the last time Punk was in Chicago, wasn't there reports out there that he was getting booed?
Like during when they were cheering for MJF?
Yeah, they were cheering for MJF the last time they were in Chicago.
Then just to, like, step in, like, quickly on this, like, I'm not sure I buy into the premise of, like, throwing this out because – what other wrestler on the AEW roster in their hometown sells 8,000 tickets?
Exactly.
Zero. Nobody.
And that's the point that we've been making for months. He, whether you like him or not, he's a star. Whether you like him or not, he's the biggest star in that company. He just is. Like you said, maybe MJF could have done something like that in Long Island. Maybe. But, like, they have now sold the United Center. And I know it wasn't sold out the other night, but still.
Right.
They have now twice built a show around CM Punk is returning. They've done that twice in 2 years. And it did well both times. And they've apparently gotten Warner Brothers Discovery to give them a lot of money for a second television show built around the fact that CM Punk's going to be the centerpiece name on it. He's the biggest star they have. Like, let's stop trying to diminish what it is. It's, you can still not like him. I'm not saying you have to like him, but he's the biggest star they have. And I'm not even sure there's a close second, because Warner Brothers Discovery is not making a second show for Kenny Omega or Chris Jericho. They're not. They could have been doing it for 4 years. They haven't. They chose not to. So, yeah, I think Punk is their biggest star.
Yeah, and he may absolutely get booed in the weeks to come, but I just think you can't throw that completely out, because he is the one, even if he's not selling like tons and tons and tons of tickets in Canada right now, he's still selling more than anyone else.
I just think it's funny where it's like, so that'll be the thing. So next week, if they don't draw well in like Regina, Saskatchewan, or wherever the hell they're going, tiny, tiny market in Canada, it's going to be, see, Punk doesn't draw, Punk's not a star. So he doesn't get credit for Chicago if it's a success, but he does get credit for another market if it's a flop. Like, so only the negative. He's responsible for all the negatives. He's not responsible for any of the positive. It's just, guys, like, look, we get it. You don't like the guy, but I don't like Orange Cassidy. But I can sit here and say, yeah, Tony should have him on TV. He gets a reaction.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I think it's stupid, but there's a reason he's on television. It's like, for some reason, the people that hate Punk can't do that. It's just, no, he shouldn't be there at all.
And I don't like QT Marshall, but I also don't think he should be on TV, so my point doesn't apply.
Yeah, I'm on board with you on that one. All right, sorry, Zach continues here. As far as the show as a whole, I enjoyed it. Tony Khan licensing Sir Elton John's Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting was just an inspired touch. I did like that as well. What did you think of the theme song?
Yeah. When I first heard it, I was like, I don't know, Elton John. But I was like, no, this fits. This is, and Elton John is, you know, really big. So it's cool that they got that.
Yeah. Zach says, my biggest takeaway, though, is that has to do with the lack of continuity. Tony Schiavone could have been on the call with Kevin Kelly and Nigel for auditory continuity. Where was a Chris Jericho promo on Darby and Sting? With the exception of the TNT title and the women's tag matches, the show largely felt like it was from scratch. Having people unique to Collision is fine. I just think that they could have done a better job making it clear that these shows operate in the same universe. For me, the ending was kind of flat, too. I'm excited to watch Dynamite after that crazy closing angle. Collision had no hot closing angle. It was just CMFTR's hand raised. That's not exactly going out on a high note. Lastly, I'm hyped for Forbidden Door. The card as of now is insane, and there's at least two or three, maybe even four matches that are going to be added, including whatever women's match there is. I have expected Mercedes Moné to show up on Saturday and reveal that she had been working everyone on the severity of her injury with how much Kevin Kelly mentioned her in there. Is there a chance her injury isn't as bad as we see? And will we see her? Or what other women's match could be added to the card? He does have a $5 challenge for us, which we'll get to later on. But yeah, I mean, it's for the overall lack of continuity between the shows. I mean, honestly, like, I don't think there's going to be much. Like, it seems like Tony, it's operating in the same universe, but I think Tony wants it to be like a Raw and SmackDown where there's separate things going on each show. So you watch Raw and SmackDown. Yes, they operate within the same universe, but there's no real continuity show to show necessarily. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think No, I was just going to say, like, I think they should be, like, selective with what they are going to be putting on, like, both shows, because I think you want to avoid what Raw and SmackDown were doing for years and just overexposing the roster. So you might want to do, like, a little video package, like, on Jericho Sting, say something like that, but I just wouldn't go overboard on every week, like, the same, you know, group of people showing up twice.
Yeah. I think your general rule should be your talent on any given week is either on Dynamite or Collision, but not both.
Yeah, I think that's good, yeah.
So, like, Jericho was on Dynamite this week, so he's not on Collision. If he's not on Dynamite next week, you can put him on Collision. Like, but you can have storylines bleed over and feature them on both shows, but they shouldn't be featured on both shows within the same week.
Yep, I agree with that.
Okay. Chad in Nebraska. First, you need to have Elton John music as the intro music instead of the normal computer music. I think you could pay the royalty to Sir Elton John for counter in counterfeit bucks, especially since David Zaslav calls you Mega Money Mike to go with one Bill Phil. Wow.
Oh,
I didn't know that either. I didn't know that he knew who I was. All right. First, I hope Jim Ross is feeling better, especially since I already got a black eye from falling. And, man, I love JR, but I think it's probably time to call it a career, at least behind the desk. I still think he does a good job with the sit-down interviews. Before I saw the ad for it, I completely forgot that Axel Andretti beat Chris Jericho. Yeah, me too. Don Callis is simply the best promo going today. Sorry, MJF. Sorry, Phil. No one can challenge me on that. Any thoughts on what Chad has to say there, Andrew?
I mean, Callis is doing a great job right now. His promos are not super in-depth, so I just don't know if I could call him the best right now because they're so brief. But they're getting amazing crowd heat, so... he's definitely up there.
All right.
Yeah.
I agree. Some impact thoughts from Chad. Moose re-up with the company. I just read this as I'm typing it. For, quote, the longest contract anyone has signed with Impact, end quote. I'm not sure if you guys are caught up on Impact. I know Andrew did the smart thing and signed up for Impact Plus, but I'm really starting to like the sarcastic Dirty Dango character who just makes fun of today's wrestlers. Mike, it reminds me of when you talked about people complaining about their pushes on Twitter. He actually mentioned that in a promo a week or two back. I will say, though, I am not too excited to see Scott D'Amore in a match with Bully Ray in 2023, but I do get it, as he's from Ontario, and that's where Slammiversary is going to be from. Jimmy Jacobs, he signed with AEW, and apparently he was the guy running the Undead Realm crap, so I hope that stuff goes away in Impact. We got step one of the Rob Terry return with Nick Aldis turning heel this week.
Step one.
Step one, if we get Sonny Siaki, Rob Terry, and Amazing Red joining up with Nick Aldis, then we know Scott D'Amore is definitely listening to you guys. P.S. Darby and Danhausen need to be fired.
Interesting. I've always had a guilty pleasure for Fandango. And I liked the promo he did before the last pay-per-view. I thought that was actually pretty solid. I think he could have been, if he wasn't had given such a crappy like gimmick, I think he could have had a pretty good career.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was pretty good. Jose from Golden Valley says he was disappointed in the overdramatic hype of the Punk ESPN interview. Some people, including the man who pays for Andrew's weekly Chipotle and Mike's New England milk coffee at Mickey D's. McDonald's coffee's good. Don't knock
it. I'm a fan. I get it, yeah.
Blew it up as if major tea was to be spilled. I mean, I just think he said that people were worried about it backstage, and they were. Let's see. The Punk promo was fantastic and felt like a true receipt to the elite in his hometown. Idiots, when they returned, claimed they were going to move on from it and never acknowledge it, and immediately made an ass out of themselves by reenacting the biting and Punk botch in Chicago. Punk literally letting the world know that the Young Bucks are worthless in the eyes of Warner Brothers Discovery. That was great, pal. The Bucks acting like, as Mike says, complete and total jackasses and running to their Twitter bios and Instagram stories to take shots of Punk was lame as hell. These two clowns ran away from Twitter because it was, quote, toxic and ruining their creativity, end quote, then claimed it was because people were tweeting Google Maps screenshots of their house, which was a complete lie. I don't even know that was a thing. If anyone did that to Sasha Banks, her Stan army would see it and blow it up big. The elite stands would have seen it. Elite stands. I'm missing the reference here. Stands?
Oh, you're like a mark. You're a huge supporter of them.
I've never heard that term before, really.
Yeah, you can be a stan for different things. Yeah.
Right.
I hope I explained it okay. The wrestling equivalent would be your mark.
Okay. Well, I'm old, apparently. I'm old and not up with the lingo. Oh, now I really sound like my dad.
I think
you kids and your lingo.
I think I'm 2 months younger than you, so this is what I have to look forward to in 2 months.
Yeah, easy. We're all going to get there one day.
Yeah.
Lastly, Aubrey Karen sequence made Charmel Jenna Maraska look like it was Okada versus Tanahashi. Karen Jarrett is based and hot.
I don't know what based is. I know what hot is.
Me too. But she's based in Hot, apparently. So I'm not surprised at all that she's a better wrestler. If you remember, she punked out Braun Strowman and had him begging for an apology.
Vaguely remember them having something. I don't remember what it was.
Anyway, the fact that RV was booked to wrestle in this clown show shows how much they have fallen as a company. Then he has a $5 challenge, which we'll get to in a little bit. What does it say to call someone based? Unless it was a typo.
Based.
In the context of internet discourse, calling someone based basically means the person is courageous, original, and unaffected by common culture.
Oh. I would need more examples to fully understand that.
I don't get it. I'm not up on the internet lingo. That's the problem. The internet slang, I'm too old for it, apparently. I know what LOL is.
And BRB. Although I don't think people really use that one much anymore.
I don't think that's like an old AOL instant messenger one.
Yeah. Did you watch that Aubrey Karen match?
Unfortunately.
I was like, while watching it, the main thought in my head was just like, why did not any of the trainers just be like, hey, Aubrey, can you throw a fake punch or a fake kick? And then when she would be like, oh, you can't. So we probably shouldn't put you in a match. Like everything she did looked awful. Everything Karen Jarrett looked even worse. Like that stroke setup, which, you know, you would have guessed you'd seen your husband set that up hundreds of times. You could like, you know, pick up how to do it, but no, it was complete garbage match. And one of the most embarrassing ones they've done so far, I'd say.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. Let's see. Alex in Minneapolis. He says, hello, I'm making my return. Mike, I thought we had made peace, but Andrew and you ruined it with the constant half-point grifting and .33 heart garbage. You two are grown men. Learn to take zeros and no half-points. Half-points need to be eradicated for good. Even when the ghost boy kisses up, it allows half-points. None of them.
Wow.
It would be like the NBA giving half-points every time a player hits the rim, even if the ball didn't go inside the net.
It's not a bad idea.
That would be kind of funny, huh? Hit the rim, half-point. Alex continues here. He says, it's quite pathetic that wrestling sites think it's a big deal when Tony Khan gives them an interview. I know Mike hates my boy Helwani, but even he has to agree with him saying a good promoter throws you a bone and gives you something to chew on instead of shutting it down. Running away from everything bad and only shilling your product is poor form. People actually want insight, not a 30-minute self-imposed victory lap. I mean, yeah, I agree there. Like, Tony needs to be aware that he's going to get asked some tough questions sometimes. You know, it's kind of the deal. Alex continues, It wouldn't have taken 10 years to find Osama bin Laden if Tony's answers were played on repeat in the cells of Guantanamo.
Wow.
Good effort. Well, didn't read the emails ahead of time. Didn't know where that was going. Good effort on the true reporters that try and pull something out of him, but he is the most robotic, corporate, non-answer spinster, carny con man, bore to listen to. Whew. Actually insulting to the interviewer's efforts. We're going hard on Tony this week, Alex.
Yeah.
Alex continues here. He says, at least when Dana White does press conferences and gets asked a tough question, he plays dumb. But well, I'm not sure that's an act.
Yeah, that's Alex.
but he says he plays dumb by saying he could. Andrew?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you hear that sound?
No. Was it spooky?
No, it wasn't spooky. I don't know what it was. I just heard some weird sound coming from, I don't know. All right. Anyway, so I think it was, I thought it was from Skype, but maybe I'm wrong. So I still sound normal, right?
Yeah,
still
do, hearing I, it, right? Do I sound normal?
You do. So okay. I don't know what that was. Anyway, back to Alex here. Because Dana White, at least he plays dumb, saying he couldn't hear them during a press conference and asked them to say it again, asking them to repeat the question, is a tried and tested method of buying extra time to develop an answer, and also derailing the questioner by having them repeat their question again. You'll notice the question is usually not phrased the same way, which also gives that person being questioned more avenues to respond and divert the question through their answer. Kevin Nash said in his podcast that large stars are getting WWE royalties cut in half because of Endeavor people gaining control. And if by July 1st, it's another low check, Ari Emanuel will hear from the big man. My first thoughts were take take them down, Big Sexy. The best chess player of all time and greatest actor to have never won an Oscar. That's an interesting thing, though. That, I mean, I don't know what he would be getting royalties for, Kevin Nash, but apparently he's not very happy about the ones he's getting.
I would guess, like, NWO merchandise, and I don't think they really pay wrestlers for being on the network any. So, I don't know, DVDs? They still sell those on the side? Blu-rays?
Must be. Yeah, I mean, I guess they, yeah.
Something like
I guess
that,
they
yeah.
sell them. I don't even know.
Hmm.
All right, Andrew. Let's see. Anything else from AEW we should discuss, do you think?
No. happy to chat more if you have anything.
Yeah, I got one more thing, but it's not about...
$5 challenge.
That's what they're all here for. Tune out if you don't want to hear some trivia. Tune in if you do. That's how we're going to play this.
Tune in
all
if
right.
you do right now.
Yeah, if not, go away. We'll see you next week. Andrew, this is first from Zach in Texas. He says, it's not time for this week's $5 challenge. 1994 was a pivotal year for WCW, Zach says.
Oh, boy.
In a lot of ways, the old WCW died with the arrival of a certain red and yellow racist. I'm going to test your knowledge of that year with 5 questions. Are we ready?
A little nervous because 94 I was not watching WCW, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Number one, the on-screen commissioner for most of 1994 in WCW was... I would just be guessing.
It wasn't Bischoff. No, because he was still...
No.
That was like 96, maybe.
Would it have been Bill Watts?
I think he was gone before that point. J.J. Dillon?
Oh, maybe J.J. Dillon? J.J. Dillon sounds right.
Later on he did, at least. I don't know if he was... I can't picture who it might have been.
I like J.J. Dillon. Should we go J.J.?
Let's go, JJ.
All right. Number two, who was the lead booker? 2 acceptable answers here.
I think Bischoff and maybe Kevin Sullivan. I would guess Sullivan because they had the Dungeon of Doom going on.
Yes, and I think Sullivan was booking them. I agree. I'm going to say Sullivan. I think Sullivan. With whom was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat feuding when he suffered his career-ending back injury?
Oh, that's a good question.
Do you remember this?
Was it Austin?
It was Austin, yeah.
Oh.
It was Austin, because I think that was part of the deal with, like, Austin had a hard time forgiving Owen Hart for the neck injury, and people were kind of like, well, yeah, you were in the ring when Ricky Steamboat had his injury.
And I've never watched that footage. Interesting.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, honestly. At what event did Hulk Hogan make his official WCW debut?
Bash at the Beach, I think. Or maybe I'm just...
I thought it was a Clash of the Champions.
Oh. Wait, did he say pay-per-view?
No, just debut. I think they did a Clash.
I was thinking, I was thinking his first pay-per-view, but even that might... let's do a Clash.
I don't know which one it was, but I think it was a Clash. And there was like, 50 of them, so...
Yeah, Clash 14? I don't know.
It would have been the summer. It would have been like July, maybe. It was a Clash in July. I'm going to say Clash of Champions in July.
Sounds good.
He says be as specific as possible. So, number 5, what was the main event of Spring Stampede 1994? Arguably the final event of old school WCW.
Oh, man.
Flair and someone.
Flair versus Sting, that's a guess.
Yeah, I agree. Flair versus Sting. All right. on-screen commissioner, most of 1994, we had J.J. Dillon. We are wrong. Nick Bockwinkel.
Oh, get out of town. Oh, I got his autograph on my wall.
Lead booker, 2 acceptable answers. We had Kevin Sullivan. According, though, to According to Zach, it was Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair.
What?
When, I got to look this up. When was Kevin Sullivan booking WCW? Apparently it was before that.
Before?
I think he
was involved with the NWO stuff. But
I don't know here. Yeah. book. 1997.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So, yeah, he booked earlier in the 90s and then again in 1997.
Interesting.
All right.
Okay.
Let's see. Who did Ricky Dragon Steamboat? Who did he hurt his back against? Steve Austin is who we had. We are correct. What event did Hulk Hogan make his official WCW debut? We had Clash of the Champions, July 1994. The correct answer, Clash of the Champions 27 in June of 94. I'm giving us credit on that one.
That sounds like a 0.75.
It's a 0.75, yeah. Sorry,
yeah.
Alex.
Yeah.
Main event, Spring TNT 1994. Who was it? We had Sting and Flair. The correct answer was Flair and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Oh, really? Well, that's a 0.5 right there.
That's a definite 0.5.
What, do we get 2.25?
That's a 2.25.
That's a 2.. Oh, I love it.
I'll have to see what Alex thinks of that. But that's a good old 2.2.
I think he'll like that, yeah.
I think he'll have to agree. All right, let's see. Chad in Nebraska. To piggyback off of crappy WCW gimmicks, here are gimmick matches. This is crappy TNA gimmick matches.
Ooh, fun.
All right. Hard Justice 2007. Who won the Doomsday Chamber of Blood match? Hint, the teams had three people on each side.
I vaguely remember this.
I don't recall this at all. The Doomsday Chamber of Blood match.
I'm going to guess just Team 3D because they were in a lot of stuff like that. They were in that Electrified Cage one, I believe.
Okay. Well, these are teams of three, so we need one more.
Brother Runt?
Oh, okay. Yeah, why not? Number two, Lockdown 2007. We had the Electrified Steel Cage match.
Oh, there we go.
Who won this five-star classic? Well, Team 3D, according to Andrew.
Yeah, I know they were in it. I don't know if they won it, but I don't remember who the other team was.
Oh, okay. So we're going to have to go with Team 3D then.
Yeah.
Who won the second Reverse Battle Royal? Not the first one, the second one.
Oh, that was recent, wasn't it?
I don't even remember. I just remember it being a bad idea for a match.
Oh, boy. I felt it was like a, you know, an open acknowledgement of how silly that was, and they did it recently, but maybe I just dreamt this, but I don't know.
So wasn't Rob Terry?
I want to get somebody like a Brian Myers or Matt Cardona, maybe?
Brian Myers sounds like a good answer.
Yeah.
Brian Myers. All right, number four. Who did Dupps lose the Dup Cup to?
Gosh. Maybe the Johnsons? But I think they only had one or two matches. Okay, so
I have zero guesses, so.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of like early. There would be like Triple X way back then, Disciples of the New Church, but I'm guessing it was a goofy team, so maybe the. I honestly, it could be like Glenn Gilberti and some goofball. Maybe just the Johnsons.
Okay. Number five, who were the participants in the blindfold match at Lockdown 2007?
Bobby Roode, James Storm?
But James Storm makes sense, because I was going to say, I remember James Storm for sure.
Yeah, I think it was Bobby Roode and James Storm.
Bobby Roode and James Storm. Okay. Number one, Hard Justice 2007 Doomsday Chamber of Blood match. Who won? We had Team 3D and Brother Runt. We are not correct.
Dang it.
Correct answer. Andrew Martin, Sting, and Abyss.
Oh, a test's one and only match, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Lockdown 2007, Electrified Steel Cage match. Who won? We had Team 3D. The correct answer was Team 3D.
Yes.
Who won the second Reverse Battle Royal? We had Brian Myers. We are incorrect. The correct answer was Sharkboy, Andrew.
Oh, but I also have his autograph on my wall.
There you go. Number four, who did the Dubs lose the Dub Cup to? We had the Johnsons. The correct answer was, I'm going to read this as Chad wrote it down. I'm not sure if we're allowed to say this in 2023, but the hardcore midget, KO.
Oh, okay.
So that one's incorrect. And number five, who were the participants in the blindfold match at Lockdown 2007? James Storm and Bobby Roode. We had the correct answer was James Storm and Chris Harris.
As soon as...
0.5 points there.
I could just cry right now because after I said that, I was picturing it. I'm like, maybe it was Chris Harris, but I feel he was gone by then. But
well, that's a 1.5, Andrew.
So we got 3.75 on the last two then if we added them together. Not bad.
All right. Jose in Golden Valley says, Andrew?
Yeah.
What do we think this is supposed to mean here? I think there's a typo here. As a response to Andrew, say to take that is, I have no problem receiving smack talk.
Oh, yeah. When he didn't, so he shut us out 2 weeks in a row, and then last week we got one, and I said, take that.
Oh, that's, okay.
I got a little cocky.
Okay. So Jose says, you'll never hear me say that's very hurtful or call myself a weirdo for not eating omelets or cereal after 11 a.m. Wrestling in the media world is the topic of Jose's $5 challenge. Number one, what former world champion had a movie-stealing performance alongside The Rock and Roman Reigns in the 2019 film Fast and Furious? Hobbs and Shaw. Former world champion.
Did you see that movie?
I've never seen a single Fast and Furious movie.
I've only seen part five. So
it's an odd one to see.
Yeah.
One, was, two, three, and four? Nope. 6 through 19? Uh-uh. But I've seen five.
I was one and done. Yeah, it was at like a dollar theater where I live. So it was like, I don't know, $1.50 to go see it.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't – former world champion. I mean, Batista wasn't in any of those movies, was he?
John Cena was eventually.
Okay, yeah, let's go Cena then.
Yeah, maybe.
There we go. Sounds too obvious, but who knows?
It does, yeah.
Number two, Scorpio Sky, the Young Bucks, Brian Kendrick, and Willie Mack made a guest appearance on what Amazon Prime series? I don't even think I can name one.
The only one I can name is the Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Marvelous Miss Basil, okay.
Maisel,
I think. Maisel.
That's the only one I can think of.
Let's do it. Number three, Kurt Angle appeared as Coach Joe Donnelly on what True TV series? The only one I know two True TV series. The Impractical Jokers or the Kamenauer Effect, because it's on all the time.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
even know that they had anything other than those two shows.
The only other one I could think of is Tacoma PD. That's the
that's right.
Super Trooper people.
Yeah, let's do that one. I can't think of anything else. Britt Baker, number four. Britt Baker performed as Lockjaw on what daytime... Britt Baker performed her Lockjaw on what daytime talk show host? Kelly Clarkson. Oprah.
Ryan Seacrest.
Steve Harvey.
Kelly Ripa. Ellen DeGeneres.
Ryan Seacrest. That one might make some sense.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz, Phil Donahue,
Marty Povich, Ryan Seacrest. You are not the father. Number five, what former TNA star had an uncredited role as a fighter on the Showtime drama Ray Donovan?
TNA wrestler, did he say?
Yeah, former TNA star.
Rob Terry?
Rob Terry makes sense to me. Rob Terry. All right, number one, former world champion, movie-stealing performance on Fifth of Furious, Hobbs and Shaw, alongside Rock and Reigns. We had John Cena. Correct answer was Nathan Jones.
Oh.
Nathan Jones is a former world champion?
Wait, yeah, that's tricky. That he was I think he was WWA world champion, very short-lived
UK promotion.
It was an Australian promotion.
Yeah. I mean, I tricky. Guess. Being very loose with world champion there.
Yeah.
Let's go for Scotty Young Bucks, Brian Kendrick, and Willie Mack. Guest appearance on One Names on Prime Series. We had,
The Marvelous Miss...
Marvelous
Maisel?
Maisel. Yeah, because that's the only one we could think of. Or you could think of. I did not know. I don't know any Amazon Prime series. Correct answer was the Betas. Betas. Never heard of them. Kurt Angle appeared as Coach Joe Donnelly on what True TV series? We had Tacoma FD. Correct answer was Those Who Can't. Never heard of it.
I have never heard of that one.
Rip Baker performed the Lockjaw on what daytime talk show host? We had Ryan Seacrest. Nope. Nick Cannon. Nick Cannon's a daytime talk show host?
Not that I know of, but I have no doubt that he probably is. Do we get shut out?
Nick Cannon hosts The Masked Singer, doesn't he?
Yeah. And...
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, number five. What former TNA star had an uncredited role as a fighter on the Showtime drama? Ray Donovan. We had Rob Terry, of course. We were shut out. Correct answer was Kevin Matthews, KM.
Oh, we got to start, yeah. He shows up and stuff like that. He just got signed by AEW, I think.
I feel like we've had did he?
Like a producer role, I think, or given a shot or something.
I feel like we've had a couple of those, too, where it's been Kevin Matthews.
Yeah.
All right, on one more $5 challenge, this is from Alex. No Mercy was a SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view during the original brand split from 2003 to 2006, and then again in 2016. Can you name the main events for each of the No Mercy pay-per-views?
I was hoping he was going to ask about No Mercy, the 64 game, the Nintendo 64 game. I could have maybe got some of that. What years?
03 to 06, and then again in 16.
Jeez. It would be total guesses. Orton versus Triple H.
That sounds like it would be one. Orton, Triple H. Well, he said they were SmackDown exclusive at one point.
Oh.
So maybe Undertaker and somebody like that. Undertaker and Batista.
Okay, I like that. JBL. JBL.
JBL and Undertaker.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay. Let's see. That's three. So if it's a SmackDown from that time period, you probably get an Eddie Guerrero match. Eddie Guerrero and somebody?
Guerrero JBL?
Ring of bell. Guerrero JBL? Sure. Could be some repeats here.
Yeah.
That's four, so we need one more. Oh, so that's early. He said it would return in 16. So what would have been 2016 SmackDown exclusive main event, No Mercy, 2016 SmackDown? That would have been like the SmackDown Live era when they were on Tuesday nights, probably.
Oh, man.
So it's like Jinder Mahal against Shinsuke Nakamura?
Or I think Orton, they had three pay-per-views, I think.
Orton and Mahal?
Yeah.
Orton and Mahal. I like it. Orton, Mahal. Okay. Let's see here. 2003, Brock Lesnar against The Undertaker in a biker chain match.
Oh, I remember.
2004, JBL versus The Undertaker in a last ride match. We actually did have JBL Taker on here, so that's one correct. 2005, World Heavyweight title, Batista against Eddie Guerrero.
Ed Guerrero. Oh.
2006, World Heavyweight Championship match. King Booker defended against Bobby Lashley, Batista, and Finley in a four-way.
Oh, wow. Well, I would not have guessed Finley was ever in a pay-per-view main event.
No. And then 2016, Bray Wyatt against Randy Orton was the main event. We had Orton versus Jinder Mahal.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's not a half point. I'm not going to get greedy here. We'll make Alex upset. All right, Andrew, that's it for emails and $5 challenges this week. Unless you have another one.
I got a special one for you if you're interested.
A special one? Okay.
Well, I'm probably overhyping it. It's probably a regular one. In fact, there's no theme this week, but we'll just say it's special for the theme.
Okay. I usually get my clues from the theme, so I don't know what I'm going to do.
Oh. The theme tonight is silly questions, we'll say.
Okay, I like it.
I think I'll say this, and you'll be like, that's kind of a silly question, but we're going with it.
Ooh.
All right, hear me out. Francois Petit, I'm probably butchering his name, Francois Petit was a WWE chiropractor who most, you know him?
I remember him from Beyond the Mat.
Maybe you'll get this. WWE chiropractor who most notably checked on Mick Foley during his Hell in a Cell match. Which video game character did he once play in a movie?
No way. He was in a movie?
Yeah.
What video game character did he play in a movie? Well, I can picture Francois Petit because he was always like checking on guys when they were hurt. You saw him at ringside all the time. He was not a very big guy, small guy, had a ponytail, dark hair. So
I am shocked he knew this. I would have not got this one at all.
I remember him also from Beyond the Mat. I think Mick Foley has the Last Man Standing match the I Quit match with The Rock from the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
And his kids are backstage and they were like, his daughter, who's like a little kid at the time, was like, you have a boo-boo? Meanwhile, he's got like a giant hole in his head.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, you have a boo-boo? And Francois is like, oh, yeah, it's just a boo-boo. It's just a boo-boo. That is okay. It's just a boo-boo. It's just a boo-boo. He needs a Band-Aid, like when you get a boo-boo. Trying to make the kids feel better. Meanwhile, he's got like this,
gushing blood.
6-inch wide gap on his skull. Okay, anyway, video game character. I mean, I don't know, man. Could it have been like a Mortal Kombat character? I mean, could he have? I don't even know. I feel like it would be like maybe he played like, because I think they did a Mortal Kombat movie. They did like a Street Fighter movie. Problem is, I'm having trouble remembering any of the names of those characters. Yeah, this is wrong. The only one I can think of is the Mortal Kombat character who, like, froze everybody. I keep on wanting to say Glacier, but I don't think that's right, because Glacier's the wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
The hell was his name, though? Sub-Zero? Sub-Zero? Sub-Zero.
You want to go with Sub-Zero?
Yeah, I think his name was Sub-Zero or something. Something to that.
Killer soundtrack. Question number two. The first episode of Monday Night Raw featured a dark match with the Cheetah Kid and Johnny Rotten. Under different names, what tag team did these two men later form?
Johnny Rotten and the Cheetah Kid. they later formed a tag team, which means it had to have been a tag team from 93 on up or 94 on up. What tag team did they form? Johnny Rotten. I don't even know. Jacob and Eli Blue. That's not right. Because they were twins. I just can't think of anything else.
Silly question number three. Who is the only wrestler to beat both Goldberg and Gilbert when the WWE title was on the line?
Whoa, what, beat Goldberg and Gilbert when the WWE title was on the line? So Gilbert was in a title match at some point, is what we're saying?
Correct.
It had to have been some sort of large multi-man match, because otherwise Gilbert being involved doesn't make any sense. But Goldberg with the WWE title might be a giveaway, because when he first came in, I don't think he had anything to do with the WWE title that first run. I think the WWE title was all his second run.
Oh, let's go. You know what? Let's go heavyweight, just like the world championship.
Okay. So that was first run. Then he was involved in that belt in some way, shape, or form. Okay. So Who would he have defeated in a match for both titles, or for the title? I mean, he could be defending it, though. He's not necessarily winning it. Gilbert. So Gilbert and Goldberg were both in a title match against this person. Chris Jericho.
Jericho, question number four. What was the first WrestleMania main event to end in submission?
Ooh, this is a good one. The first WrestleMania main event to end in a submission? It wasn't one, it wasn't two, it wasn't... Okay.
Okay.
I think this could be a slight... I think this could be a slight trick question.
Oh.
I don't remember how WrestleMania 9 ended, but Brett beat Yokozuna, and then Hogan came out and won the title afterwards. But Brett and Yoko was the main event. However, I don't think Brett could have gotten Yoko in a sharpshooter. So when Brett won the title the following year, that was also against Yoko at WrestleMania 10. 11 was Diesel Shawn. That wasn't submission. 12 was the Iron Man match. 13 was Sid and Taker. 14 was Michaels and Austin. 15 was Rock and Austin. I mean, I guess Rock... No, that doesn't make sense. I think it was either 9 or 10. And I'm going to say it was 9. 10. I think 10. It was 10.
Okay.
I think he pinned him at 9, and then he submitted him at 10.
Right, last question. This wrestler was allegedly dared to put a squirrel down his pants, which resulted in him going to the hospital. Was it?
Okay. I have to, there's two parts to this. Who hangs around dumb enough people that would be a dare? And who would be dumb enough to do that, even if they were dared? I don't recall the story at all. But let's say the correct answer is Sean Waltman.
All right. Five questions, five answers. Well, I guess
zero.
Six. Well, are you locked in?
Oh, I'm about to lock in. I'm going to also say here that I have absolutely no confidence in any of these answers, but I'm going to lock in right now.
Gosh, it just seems like yesterday I tricked Brie Bella into believing she was eating meat. That sweet little girl never did find out. It was actually cat food.
That's a bit fitting. That was very silly.
It was silly, yeah.
That was a random one. That was super random.
I didn't even look. I just picked it.
Tonight you got exactly one right. Which one do you think it was?
Which one do I think it was? Oddly enough, I think it was the Jericho one. The Jericho fought Goldberg and Gilbert in a title match.
So, in perhaps the biggest stunning moment of the $5 challenge, you got the first one right, the video game question.
No way, really? Yeah. I didn't even know. I was guessing on the name. I didn't even know the guy's name.
It was Sub-Zero.
It's Sub-Zero?
Played Sub-Zero.
That was a complete and total guess. Not only was like, well, the only thing I can think of is Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat, and then all he could think of was the guy that froze people, and I couldn't think of his name. So I just got, I'm like, it's not Glacier, so like Sub-Zero. Oh, that's hilarious.
I thought, like at every point I was like, nope, he's not going to get this right. He's not going to get this right. And I thought you were going to be like, Chili McFreeze or something.
I almost went there, yeah, because I couldn't think of anything. Oh, that's crazy.
Out, yeah. First episode of Monday Night Raw had a match featuring Cheetah Kid and Johnny Rotten under different names. What tag team did they later form? You guessed Jacob and Eli Blue. Hell of a guess, but it was Public Enemy.
I was almost said that because Johnny Rotten and Johnny Grunge.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I almost said Public, but I was like, no, I think they were already the Public Enemy at that point.
Probably the following year, maybe?
Yeah, that's what got me. In my head, I was like, I think they were already in ECW at this point, but probably not. No, 93. I mean, I bet they were, they probably formed that tag team later on in 93, honestly.
Oh, it was interesting. Probably 90, okay.
It was probably 93 or definitely by 94 in ECW.
Oh, right on. Because the first Raw was in January, right? I think.
Yep. Yeah, it was early in the year.
Later
yeah.
on the year. Huh, crazy. Who's the only wrestler to beat both Goldberg and Gilbert when the WWE title was on the line? You guessed Chris Jericho. It was Triple H.
I should have guessed him. He beat everybody then.
He beat everybody. What was the first WrestleMania main event to end by submission? You guessed WrestleMania 10. It was actually WrestleMania 20. Chris Benoit.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, I couldn't remember, but I had to go with 9 or 10 because, I mean, Brett was in both of those in one, so I'm thinking sharpshooter, right? But how do you get the sharpshooter on Yokozuna? You can't.
Well, just so we don't get any emails next week, Bret Hart lost at WrestleMania 9, and then that's why Hogan came in.
That's right, he did, didn't he? He did. That's right. I forgot about that. Never mind.
Well, I kind of like that idea that Bret Hart wins, and then Hogan's like, hold up. I'm going to get a piece of him, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, Bret lost. He did win at WrestleMania 10, but he lost it. Yeah, he lost at 9. That's funny.
I'll have to watch how he won at 10. I don't recall, but I was like, oh, that does kind of make sense. But he must not have gotten in.
I remember him winning. That's the way he had to fight Owen earlier in the night.
Yeah.
And Yokozuna defended against Luger and then Bret Hart on the same show. And he won because they were, like, lifting him onto their shoulders at the end. And they showed Owen Hart, I think, in the IOA, like, all, you know, aggravated because he beat Bret earlier in the night. And then Bret wins the title at the end of the night. And, like, it was a great storyline. But he must have pinned him. I just don't remember how.
Yeah, I don't recall either. And the final question, this wrestler was dared to put a squirrel down his pants, which resulted in him going to the hospital. You guessed Sean Waltman. It was Sid Vicious.
No, that does track, actually.
I did not know this story until today, but apparently I saw it on a couple different sites too. I can't guarantee if this has actually happened, but it's out there in wrestling lore. But apparently he took a squirrel with him out on the road. And the boys dared him to put it down his pants for a minute, and he lasted 30 seconds before getting bit a bunch of times, and they're going to go to the hospital. Don't put squirrel hilarious. Down your pants if you learn anything.
No.
Show.
Yeah, do not. Do not. All right, Andrew, where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast. We recorded last week, and I think we're aiming for about a week or so to release the next episode, but get caught up on the other 54 episodes before that, the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can find me on Twitter at TorchicMan. Email the show, allelitafter@gmail.com. Give us a call if you want to call us at 515-605-9345. You can be just like DJ from Miami. You got to do that on Monday nights. We record Monday nights at 9 p.m. So Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. We were a little late tonight, but Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern is when we record, 515-605-9345, and you can join us. And Andrew, I think that's it, unless there's anything else we need to talk about.
No, I think we're good. I think we said it all that needs to be said.
I think we did it once again. We said it all. All right, well, we said it all for this week, but we'll have more to say next week, so we'll talk to you then. Bye.